good to be with you on this Monday, the 1st of June. I'd like to begin by firstly acknowledging traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. And a welcome to you if you're listening to Let's Talk through the National Indigenous Radio Service. We have with us today Gail Turnbull, who is a senior tobacco action worker with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. And Gail is here to talk to us about a number of things. Yesterday, you might have know this, was World No Tobacco Day. There was a big women's netball carnival also held in Southeast Queensland, which you may have heard Gail talking about on our station. And she is here to talk about tobacco and the campaign to get mob off the smokes and also to stop people from picking up the smokes as well. So, Gail.
And good morning, Karen, and good morning everyone out there listening. Yes, we did have a great day yesterday. It was actually out of Darra, and there was over 20 teams of women players, young and mature age women, had a great day, and a lot of their, it was very surprising to see a lot of their family come along with them. So well and over 400 people in attendance, I'd say, for the day.
And this was the second netball carnival of this type?
Yes, it was, yes.
And by comparison, how did it, fare to the first one?
Very much doubled in size and entries, and also, people just coming along and seeing how what the day was all about. Very successful.
Successful. So tell us what actually happens. Yeah, so you had 20 teams and there was a tournament. They played against each other, but that wasn't all. Netball wasn't the only thing that was on.
No. When they did come in on the day, they actually went through a generalised health check in saying that it was just checking their weight, height, doing the glucose test with them, checking their blood pressure, and then just doing a general medical check on them to see if they were, okay to play, really. And, then they did a smoking survey, which is what we do through all of our community events, just to find out what the smoking prevalence is within our Southeast Queensland community. And then they were able to go and play the tournament.
Well, did you have many smokers, current smokers, past smokers, non-smokers?
There wasn't many smokers out of, say, like there was 10 per team, so that's over 200. I'd say there would have been about maybe 2% of those were smokers, and there were a few ex-smokers, and a lot of the younger ones hadn't sort of taken it up yet, so which was great to tick those boxes.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll stay that way as well.
Yes, definitely.
Well, tell us about how long you've been there as a senior tobacco action worker and what that role actually entails.
Mm-hmm. I've been with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health for nearly 2 years now. Time flies. And I actually came across from Quitline. I was a telephone counsellor there and been there for 3 years. So I have a passion with working with people to help them quit smoking. And even if they want to, learn more about how to quit smoking or what the effects of smoking does to your body. So that led me into when the Institute was advertising for a position there. So my role at the Institute is to educate, promote smoking cessation, and also engage with community organisations in developing and implementing smoking policies, just ensuring that they have a smoking policy that's up to date. And then we support that organisation right through to supporting their staff, doing Say No to Smokes program with their staff and even clients of those facilities, organisations, and then also promoting it through our schools as well, which is part of our Deadly Choices arm of the Institute.
Yeah, so because I was wondering the relationship between the work that you do and the work that the Deadly Choices campaign and their Healthy Lifestyle team does. They I imagine, complement each other and you're not doing the same thing.
That's right, exactly. We actually, our head office is at Bowen Hills, but the Healthy Lifestyle, Preventative Healthy Lifestyle team is out at Darra. So out at Darra we've got the Deadly Choices team, tobacco team, chronic disease, and in within that Deadly Choices arm is the Deadly Choices project officers, which reach out to the schools and community. So they're our eyes and ears on the ground, so to speak, when we wanted to, you know, talk about smoking and tackling smoking in our communities. So we use them a lot to go into the schools or community groups and community organisations. Yeah.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. Gail Turnbull is with us. She's a Senior Tobacco Action Worker with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. Back with her in just a moment. Gail, where's your who your mob and where you come from?
I'm actually, my mother's and father are from the Gamilaroi tribe. So I was born in southeast Queensland, Dhurrumbandi.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and mum was born in Texas, so just at near Gundawindi.
Yep.
And then Dad was born in Angledool, just over the border from Queensland. So Gamilaroi is the biggest tribe there. So, yeah, very proud Gamilaroi woman.
Where did you grow up?
Dhurrumbandi.
Dhurrumbandi.
Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up there till I was back in 1980. Dad sort of was looking for more employment and went to Coonamble in New South Wales, which is still a part of the Gamilaroi tribe as well, to be with his sister as well, so, and other families. So we stayed there and finished my high schooling there, and then started in my first job there as well, and then went on to, you know, do a lot of work in administration and management, and which took me from Coonamble to Melbourne, Ballina, which is out near I worked on Cabbage Tree Island in Ballina, doing management roles, particularly in housing, employment and education.
And the
community development.
Yep, and mainly in Aboriginal organisations?
Very much, yeah, all Aboriginal organisations. Actually, Melbourne, I went down to work for ATSIC.
Okay.
Back in those days.
Back in the day.
I was showing my age. Yeah, so, and then I had sort of getting closer to Queensland and my home territory, so I came back over the border, yeah, and planted myself in Toowoomba for a couple of years, and worked at the university there as a student support and then into finance, so various roles
was
over
that
the years.
When the university was Southern Cross then at
yes,
that stage?
Yes, yes,
yeah.
At the Gumbari unit there, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, so I worked there for a couple of years and then actually thought I got a big break of working for another Indigenous organisation here in Beenleigh. So I came to work for them as a housing organisation, which was doing employment and housing and a lot of community development projects as well, running CDPs back in those days. Yeah, so I started there and then just ventured out into doing other things like drug and alcohol as well with an organisation, Indigenous organisation in the city. That was more of a referral service. And then, just back, got burnt out from the Aboriginal organisations after all those years of working with them and went into...
Well, it does take a toll, doesn't it?
Because
you are basically at the front line and you know what our mob are going through and you obviously want to... I mean, what prompted you to work for your mob?
Oh, back in those, back when I first started, it was more about accountability, knowing that our organisations can be accountable and we do, you know, want to use the government funding for better, you know, to empower our people to do much better in life. And seeing the CDP program come out when it did was a godsend for our people to get them off the dole and work a couple of days a week to give them pride and become role models for their children as well, that they could see that their dads were going out to work, you know, a few days a week and they wanted to be the same sort of person when they grew up too. So it instilled a lot of that in the family groups at that time. So, yeah, mainly the accountability and saying that, yes, we do, and standing up for our rights as well. as an Aboriginal person.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering what it was like for you and your family in Dirranbandi. Were you living under the Act, in a mission? What was the case there, circumstances there?
I remember when we first, because we were always living on properties. Dad was always working as a station hand. Mm-hmm. So we moved in from, I think it was Cubby Station. I was nearly born out there. It's actually a big cotton farm out there now.
Yep.
Out at Dirranbandi.
Always in the news for some reason or
yes,
other.
Yes, mm. yes, yes. And it was owned by Colin Maher. Actually, he's Ray Maher on Home and Away. It's his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mum always says the story of Ray coming out and being on the property a few times, and I wouldn't know, but I was tiny then. But mm-hmm. We moved back in town because my little brother had asthma and was always taking him, you know, 60 kilometres into town to the doctors. So then we actually moved to the mission, like a little mission type thing on the other side of the bridge and off to your right.
Yep.
So that's where we were living for
what many was the name years. Of the mission?
Well, I don't think it was called anything like back then.
It was just a place where
all the Aboriginal people lived. Yeah, yeah. And we walked to school from, you know, started school from there. It was like I think looking back now, it must have been about a 2.5 kilometre walk to school for a 6-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That was one way. So we did that. And I think even back then, Mum had to worry about, you know, the family had to worry about the fairer kids because it was still going on then, you know, stolen kids being taken away or kidnapped even.
Mm.
Yeah, and I remember things like that happening, that we were followed on the way home from school. We all had to walk with our cousins and in a big group and things like that because it was quite a... We had to walk right around an airport type thing.
Where's the non-Indigenous heritage come from?
My grandfather, Turnbull, Pop Turnbull, is non-Indigenous.
No relation to Malcolm Turnbull?
I'm not quite sure.
Not the same family tree.
No. Might have to dig deeper, yeah.
Mm. All right. What were you like at school?
Quiet one, yeah, very quiet. I did well at school, I must say. And we were always there, hail, rain or shine, even though we had to walk 2.5 kilometres to school, and we were always there. We never had a day off. We were always prided by, you know, Mum was always up in the office with the, you know, principal saying, you know, geez, your children are always here. I come from a family of 9 children. I'm a twin sister. Mum had 2 sets of twins, so she had a handful.
Certainly sounds like it. And Dad, I imagine, being a station hand, would have been...
Away a lot. Yes, 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 definitely. So we, you know, our aunts and uncles became, like, you know, very close to us as well, and very good support for us when we were growing up as well.
Did you grow up on bush food, bush tucker? Because
yes.
I would imagine that, yeah, feeding 9 mouths, you had to supplement it with bush tucker.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. The porcupines, the fish straight off the line and all that sort of stuff. Lovely, yeah.
So what's the makeup there, sexes? So how many boys, how many girls?
Mum had 3 boys and 6 girls.
Okay, so the girls did the lion's share of the work then, pretty much.
That's right,
That'd be fair to say, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes, definitely.
What did the boys get up to?
The little boys thing, riding horses and just going out.
So they're the younger ones.
Yeah, all right.
So they got away with stuff.
Yeah, I've got an older brother, but he was sort of like, as soon as he could drive and ride horses, he was with Dad too.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right.
And my older sister was doing the same thing as well. Yeah. But I think when we grew up in Dirranbandi, because we were always on properties, the eldest ones were all able to go to boarding schools. And then when we sort of moved back into town, they were already in boarding school in Warwick.
Mm-hmm.
And then my twin sister and I weren't allowed to go because we were already in town where the high school was there, so in Dirranbandi.
Yep.
So, no, we didn't go. But I think, you know, their schooling was great, you know. And moving to New South Wales was just, you know, the same sort of thing. We mixed in well. We were able to make friends quickly. And we're a very well-known family in the town and very well-respected too as well, yeah.
How long did that sceptre of, you know, possibly being taken away from your parents because of your mixed heritage hang over the family?
I think until we moved into the town itself, that probably would have been, you know, maybe a few years later. You know, we would have been about 7 or 8 by the time we got into town, yeah.
And what about the family, like looking at Dad's side of the family? Did anyone get affected by that?
No, I don't think so. And most of them lived in St. George, which is a neighbouring town as well. So,
fortunate.
Remember, yeah.
Very. One of the fortunate families not touched by it.
Yes, exactly. Mm. I think because we're a solid community in saying that we're all, you know, very extended family, but we looked after each other. Every child, you know, every adult looked after a child and kept an eye on everybody, yeah. Mm. The comings and goings of the community, yeah.
And what would you say would be the point where you decided, you know what, I'd like to work for an Aboriginal organisation once I finish school, that I will take myself to Melbourne to go and work for ATSIC, or I would go and work for a local Aboriginal housing company? Was there something that happened that made you choose that path, or did the path choose you?
I think, I chose the path. I think when I was just doing my first sort of like traineeship, there was a lot of in the news about Aboriginal organisations being misappropriations of funds and all this sort of thing back in the 80s. I chose that to say that, no, I want to be one of those ones that is out there managing an organisation that's doing, you know, what the community wants, and we're being accountable, you know, and we're lifting our, you know, our profile, even our whole, you know, developing businesses and things like that. So, yeah, no, I did choose to do that. And even in saying that, I did say that I was burnt out, but you can only do so much.
Yes.
You know, in your working life. Mm. And, and you need a break too as well.
Well, so you got burnt out, and so what do you go do? You go decide you go and try and tackle an issue that, you know, some would say is bigger than Ben-Hur, and that is the smoking rates amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. At the last census, I think, or the one before that, what was it? It was about 50%?
Yes, 49.
49%. Mm, it's dropping, though.
Yes, it's down to 41% now, which is fantastic. We're slowly closing the gap in our smoking rates among our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So, yeah, it's very good to see. And it does show in our community events all across southeast Queensland. We do, if anyone knows of those community events, have been to them. Some of them we've had our marquee set up as non-smoking side and a smoking side. So, and we look back on the day and go, oh, my God, a lot of people came through the non-smoking side, which is fantastic. So we're starting to see that, notice that firsthand, and then with all the surveys and with the support of the data being collected at our medical services right across southeast Queensland, that we can see that there is a trend that is slowly dropping in you know, people saying no to the smokes,
right,
or becoming ex-smokers.
Mm. We'll continue talking about smoking in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. We're with Gail Turnbull, Senior Tobacco Action Worker with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. A timely reminder there from Tracy Thompson, who is one of the Deadly Choices ambassadors. We are speaking, of course, right now with Gail Turnbull, who is a Senior Tobacco Action Worker. Tracy was listing all of the medical services that where people can go and get their health check, mm-hmm. and obviously keep on top of their health. How does the Senior Tobacco Action Worker work in with all of the medical services that we have here? I think at last count there was like 18 or 19 now.
18, yes. Excuse me. Yes, there is 18, and exactly right. We do link in with the Aboriginal Medical Services in training the staff up into making sure that they know the basic knowledge of how to deal with a client that comes in and says, hey, I want to quit smoking, or I'm thinking about it. So they'll be able to say to them, this is what, you know, we can do for you, or there's a program we can offer. So we help by a program called Mind, Body and Spirit, And it's to train people in the clinics from, say, the bus driver right down to the bus driver or the cleaners right up to the doctors.
So it's everybody?
Everybody.
Why is that? What's the rationale?
Because if they do jump on the bus, every medical service provides transport to and from their appointments. So, if someone says to the bus driver, because they're probably all well known in the community, and saying, oh, John, I want to quit smoking, I'm going to talk to my doctor about it, and then he may be able to say, this is what you can do. The clinic offers this. If you cut down, you'll be able to use maybe nicotine replacement products and stuff like that. So just that general awareness of what to brief intervention, we call it, in talking to a client about smoking cessation.
How different is your work from the work that you were doing with Quitline?
With Quitline, it was more telephone counselling. It was never face-to-face. I shouldn't say never. We did we were able to go out to community events and promote Quitline and also, see what was really happening out there, particularly during NAIDOC week. We used to tag along with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health and sit in their tents, and once they were talking to people about quitting, they would say, oh, here's so-and-so from Quitline if you want to talk to them about, quitting and setting up an appointment so they can call you for further or additional support while you're quitting.
What qualifications do you need as a smoking cessation counsellor, I suppose?
Well, generally, the general intake was mainly just being out, quit smoking for 6 months for a start, and then just being out, experiencing community. They did train you as you got into the position, so 2 weeks full-on training in how to talk to people, and they did coaching on the telephones and everything like that. So, just a passion for wanting to help people quit smoking was probably the main criteria of getting the job.
All right.
Yeah. So, and then the additional training was fabulous.
Were you a smoker yourself?
No, but as you can hear from my voice, I've got the effects of secondhand smoking from my parents. Thanks, Mum and Dad. and just smoking in cars, smoking in the houses. So I've just developed asthma over the last couple of years. It doesn't come along straight away. It does build up in your body over years. Someone smoking now and says, oh, it's not going to affect me. I'm fine. I'm not sick. It will happen in the long run. Yeah.
Well, explain what cigarette is actually doing to your body.
Well, it's actually depleting your body of oxygen for a start. Your body's actually, carbon monoxide is one of the main chemicals in a cigarette. So it's attaching itself to one of your blood cells and depleting your body of oxygen. So you mightn't have too much circulation to your hands and feet, lack of energy. And also it's lowering your immune system, which is a big one. So you're going to get sick. You mightn't get sick while you're smoking, but once you stop smoking, a lot of people have found out that they've, developed a chronic cough or just been unwell. And they think, oh, shivers, I shouldn't have stopped smoking. But it's your body trying to start to repair itself. So, yeah. And it does... bronchitis, risk of heart disease, lung disease, all those things. It actually affects your body from top to toe. So when I was talking about depletion of oxygen, your brain's been tricked, so it's making more blood cells. And if you're suffering from a bit of cholesterol or a bit of fatty tissue in your arteries, it can bring on a stroke or a heart attack. So very, very, like a little time bomb waiting to go off, really. Yeah, so people just don't know that this is happening. It mightn't look like they're ill, but they could be very, at risk of getting sick from a disease.
And people know this. They know that smoking is bad for them, but they can't stop. And the problem is that it's addictive.
Definitely. That's one of the other main chemicals in a cigarette. There are three main chemicals, which is that carbon monoxide I mentioned, the nicotine, which is the most addictive part of the cigarette. So if there wasn't any nicotine in a cigarette, they wouldn't be addicted. So it is. And then they've also, the other side of that, is that they've trained their brain to do a lot of things. They've developed a superhighway of habits, so to speak. So they've been repetitive, having a cigarette and a coffee, having a meal and a cigarette, and all these sort of things that they've associated with this, their smoking over the years of smoking.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's not just, 2 weeks. It's some people have been smoking for half of their life, which is probably about 40 years or 20 years.
Mm.
So doing that 20 times a day definitely forms a super highway of habits in the brain. So very hard to
I can relate to that. I've been a non-smoker since 2011 when I gave up.
Oh, congratulations.
But there are moments where that urge to have a cigarette is very strong.
Yeah.
And it's certain situations, like my brain telling me, hey, this is what you used to do when you used to hang around with your family.
Yeah.
And do something anyway that I used to do, mm-hmm. associate with smoking. So
yep, yep.
I can totally understand that.
Exactly.
And imagine how hard it is for someone who's just starting out trying to quit. What have you found is the when it comes to being successful at quitting? I've heard a number of times that it's just keep trying to quit and you'll eventually get there.
Yep, yep.
Is that it?
Definitely.
Or are there other things?
Yeah. I mean, people want to go cold turkey, which is not using any sort of assistance from the doctor or the chemist. It's very, keep trying. You always learn from what didn't work for you or what worked for you in that quit attempt. So it's finding out what will work for you in the end that will make you more successful.
Mm.
But the other way is to there are nicotine replacement products out there. Like I said, you can buy them from the chemist, supermarkets, or go and see your GP, because patches are still available on the prescription, which... on the Closing the Gap, you can get them for free.
Mm-hmm.
You can get two lots, like 6 months' worth, from your GP going to see him. So, and using nicotine replacements like patches, gum, lozenges, the mouth spray, and the new one out, and lozenges, and the little strips that you have too now that are out, they came out last year. They're all products that can, increase your success in quitting by 3 times than going cold turkey in comparison, yeah.
So how do they work? So they're called nicotine replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that you're getting nicotine another way but in lower dosages, or how does it work?
Yes, definitely right, Karen. You are getting nicotine, but it's clean nicotine. In one cigarette, there are over between 4,000 and 7,000 chemicals in one cigarette.
Mm.
So, in the nicotine that you're getting from the nicotine replacement products, such as a patch, it's clean nicotine, pure nicotine, no other chemicals that will cause cancers or, diseases. So, and there are like 69 carcinogens that are in a cigarette that does cause cancers as well. So, using that nicotine replacement product, it will give you a more, and it's a lower dose than a normal cigarette, because you're having one patch a day.
Mm-hmm.
You're not having a patch 20 times a day.
Right.
Yeah. So, within a cigarette, there's probably about 1% of nicotine in there. Within a patch, there's probably just 0.5 or half or something for the whole 24 hours you're using it.
What other therapies are available?
So there's patches,
mm-hmm.
gums, lozenges, which are like little lollies, and a inhalator, which is like a plastic tube that looks like a size of a cigarette. And then there's the Listerine strips. Not Listerine strips, they are like Listerine, but they're nicotine strips
mm-hmm.
and nicotine spray. And then you can go to your doctor and talk about the medicines that are out there as well.
Yep.
There's tablets called varenicline, which is commonly known as Champix.
Okay.
And there's bupropion, which is commonly known as Zyban.
And what do they do?
They're medications that actually sort of work at mimicking the effects of the nicotine. So they work towards, you know, reducing those cravings and urges to have a cigarette, pretty much like the nicotine replacement products. You use them when you have an urge to have a cigarette after a meal or or coffee or something like that. But these ones are constantly building up in your body and particularly, say, the Champix, for instance, actually works works in making the taste and smell of the cigarettes disgusting for you as well. So you can still smoke while you're using them for the first 14 days. Set yourself a quit day and then, you know, and by that time, hopefully the medication's built up in your body and, you know, you don't want to pick up a cigarette anymore.
Mm.
It's actually coding those receptors in the brain, like you had mentioned before, that you still feel there's a little thing niggling in your head saying, Karen, you should have a cigarette. This is what's happening. It's coding those little receptors, making them lay dormant even more so they don't feel like they're having a cigarette.
Yeah.
But having said that, if you do have a cigarette, it only takes that one cigarette to wake those little receptors up.
Yep.
And then you're back to being probably a full-on smoker again. So it is touch and go. It's very sensitive and, you know, it's a long quit journey. It doesn't sort of take 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. It could be a long, you know, some people have known to say that they're still ex-smokers by, you know, 30 years on.
Yeah.
Because they still don't trust themselves to say, oh, if I do pick that up, I'll be back on the cigarettes.
Mm.
You know, there are a lot of things that affect that, you know, going back onto the cigarettes. Like stress is a big issue out there for our mob. We've been through it from, you know, colonisation. You know, it's intergenerational and all that sort of thing. So we've got to take those sort of things into consideration as well. So when dealing with people wanting to quit smoking.
Mm. Mm. The other thing, I guess, and you mentioned it there in your answer, you have to set a date.
That's right.
So, whether that was yesterday, today, or Friday, set a date.
Yep. A good well plan, sit down and set a good plan out for yourself. A quit plan is a good way to, you know, keep on track about and progressing every day.
Mm-hmm.
Take, you know, and thinking about it too, just taking it one day at a time, but also looking towards setting that quit date.
Mm.
Something that your goal that you can reach, say, by day 14, I want to be quit.
Yep.
Yeah. And using medication or using nicotine replacement products, attending one of our programs that we have, like the Say No to Smokes.
Yep.
That which, you know, we want to be running through, you know, teaching people in the clinics to run them. So they have their own smoking clinics or referrals to health workers that do brief intervention with clients there. That'll be, you know, we'll be rolling that out over the next year or so. We're always continually improving and rolling it out for each clinics.
Mm.
So as, like you said, we've grown from when I started, there were only 9 clinics, I think,
so
and they're up to, you know, doubled it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm. Mm.
So there's a lot of people within Southeast Queensland too. The population's growing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And as you said, the rate is dropping down. We're now around 41%, so that's fantastic.
It is.
How are we going in terms of stopping new smokers?
I think it's fair to say that there's work being done out there, like through our Deadly Choices programs, our family days, community days, I'd say. A lot of it we do go through our schools dealing with years 3 up to year 12s or 10s maybe. And we run a part of the Deadly Choices 7-week program, leadership program. One session is on tobacco. So it's providing them with the education about what's in a cigarette.
Does that work?
It does work, yeah. Mm. We have some great visual resources for the students to touch and feel and a PowerPoint presentation and, you know, having a look at, even just having a look at the giant cigarette and looking what's in there, having to say, look, that they think there's only 9 in there, but they see a rat that's in there that's dead. you know, a little visual of a rat dead, and we go, that's rat poisoning, that's what's killed the rat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the cigarette as well. Yeah.
They still carry around that jar of tar.
Yes, yes. It's gorgeous.
Did you say gorgeous?
Actually, just to tell you a story about one of my clients, she saw that jar. She'd been sitting there with her prescription for Champix for a few weeks before she came to day one, week one of our Say No to Smoke session.
Yeah.
And then she saw it and she went, oh, my God, I have to go and get that script filled. And throughout the program, she'd become quit for the whole 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'd touched base with her another, say, month later, and she was still quit. So just seeing that jar of tar, which is a charm with lots of tar and half full, and it's actually represents a smoker smoking 10 a day for 12 months. And, yeah, it's quite a powerful tool to have for kids and adults alike.
Yeah. And I guess that's one of the things with public health campaigns. You can choose a number of strategies. You can go down that fear-based path, or you can go down the strength-based path and talk about all the good things that come from not smoking. And the fear-based one is, you know, the rotted teeth, the gangrenous foot and that sort of stuff that will happen to you, that could happen to you from smoking. So I would suggest that with Deadly Choices and the work that you're doing, it's a combination of both. So, but let's focus then on the strength-based things about not smoking.
I think the strength-based thing is that we do as a overall is that we just provide that information and offer support. And it's non-judgmental.
Yep.
So we're not saying to each individual, each group, that you have to quit smoking, this is what's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about just providing that education and support around what smoking does do to your body and what the cost is on the individual, the family and the community as well.
Absolutely.
So the strength, I think that's a very big strength in itself, that we provide that support. And, you know, they don't see us as the smoking police when we do go to schools and community groups. They used to, but now they're sort of tethered out a bit to say that, oh, yes, she's not going to, you know, they walk past and say, I'm going out for a cigarette or something. So, you know, yeah, and I think that's the...
I'm sure everyone's got an auntie and an uncle who'll growl you anyway for this. No, who'll do that for, you know, who'll be the judgmental one who'll growl you for smoking and stuff like that. So you don't need to do that because we know that there's always someone in the family who will will tell you you should quit smoking.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, the benefits of stopping smoking, can we list through what some of those benefits are within the first 24 hours to within a year?
Yep. Within the first 24 hours or 12 hours even, you know, you wake up in the morning, you decided you didn't want to keep smoking, your blood pressure and your heart rate's actually slowly dropping back to normal. And then also nicotine that's in your body is reducing as well. Within, you can say within 3 to 5 days, there's no nicotine in your body. So it's not all about the nicotine anymore. We were talking about that as being the addictive part. It's all about, you know, the habitual side of it. But so there's no nicotine in your body. Your circulation to your hands and feet are improving. So you're feeling a bit more energetic. You want to go walking. Within, you know, those 3 to 5 days as well, your sense of taste and smell comes back. People don't realise that they lose that. And they, you know, maybe liking a Vegemite sandwich when they were smoking, but go when they quit smoking, go, oh my God, why was I eating Vegemite? But you know, that's a good example.
Yes.
But you know, within 3 months, your lungs are starting to clean themselves effectively. So
this is when you're coughing up a lot.
Yeah, you're coughing up all that phlegm and muck, and some people have been known to just have one big cough, and it's all gone. But, you know, by 12 months, you've actually reduced, halved your risk of getting sick from diseases like lung cancer and heart disease. So you're definitely, you know, reducing your risk of being unwell for the future, and you're increasing your life, you know, living a healthier lifestyle and you know, enjoying your later years in life too as well.
And look, the other thing too is that you're not exposing your family members to secondhand smoke. I mean, you cop it yourself.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, last year, like with, you know, World No Tobacco Day, the promotion was, and I'm sure it was still going this year as well, it's always ongoing, that we were tackling secondhand smoking because there was over 600,000 people dying each year from secondhand smoke. So it is, and it was, you know, starting to become up there with, you know, dying of lung cancer.
Mm.
So, yeah, it would reduce those numbers as well.
Well, the risk with secondhand smoke is that there's no filters.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you know, a person that doesn't smoke hasn't got any filters on their lungs, and as someone that does smoke with a, you know, normal cigarette, or even if they've got, rollies, they put filters in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we're 130 times more at risk of getting sick with, you know, from diseases of smoking, like the lung cancer, the asthma, the bronchitis, heart disease as well.
Mm.
And if you're diabetic, it's even worse again. You know, like you mentioned before, gangrene sets in and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Mm.
Not nice.
All right. Well, if there's anything that anyone takes away from today's chat with you, would that be set a date?
I think so. Sitting down and having a good look at, you know, your daily life in your day in the life of smoking, and then listing, you know, what you can do differently in that day. You know, swapping it for something simple. I know, just for an example, would be like some people get out of bed, go and have a cigarette. Maybe it's like saying to them, well, I won't get out of bed. I'll get out of bed tomorrow, but I'll go and have a shower first and then make brekkie.
Yep.
Something simple.
Change those habits.
Yep, just changing those habits.
And what about when you have parents who are long-term smokers? How do you help them?
A lot of the smokers that have been smoking a long time,
mm-hmm,
are very hard to change their minds. And you know, they've got a stuck, you know, mindset that they're not sick now. They've been smoking for years or keep smoking.
Mm.
It's very hard. But I think it's just planting the seeds daily or whenever you get the opportunity to say, you know, even...
seeds, not passive-aggressive notes all over the place.
Yes, yes, yes.
Your cigarettes are making me sick.
Yes, yes. Just being nice and gentle with them and saying, you know, if you did quit, these are some of the facts. And
Then
maybe they would think about, oh, you know, Nan, I want you to be around a bit longer to help me, you know, see your grandchildren, you know, and all these sort of things.
Yes.
Those sort of things are asking them what they really value in life. Do they want to be around longer to see their grandchildren grow up and get married and all, you know, it's what they feel about their own lives.
Yep.
What they value more. It's an individual thing.
Yep.
You know, some people can go cold turkey just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can't.
Mm.
And it's about where they feel that they are at this point in time, that they're contemplating quitting.
Yep. Yeah. All right. How can people get in touch with you and, you know, other tobacco workers?
Yep. We've got a team. We've got a small team of the tobacco team out of Dara.
Mm-hmm.
You could actually either go to any of our AMSs,
mm-hmm,
across southeast Queensland.
So they won't see you specifically you've done the training
to
the health workers.
That's right.
Okay, yep. And to the bus driver.
Yes, exactly. So any AMSs, and talk to the doctors there about, mm-hmm, quitting. We can come along and develop, you know, do programs in those clinics,
mm-hmm,
for them if they haven't already developed their own.
Yep.
So they can call myself.
Yep.
And I've got an off-sider called Elena Hames.
Mm-hmm.
We're all very trained in tobacco smoking cessation.
Mm-hmm. And what's the number there?
You can call me on 0403,
mm-hmm,
080 690.
Right. Don't call now, obviously, because she's on the air. All right. Fantastic. So 0403 080 690. So that's if, if I'm an organisation, an Indigenous organisation, and I want to introduce some kind of smoking policy,
mm-hmm,
that's something that you can come in and deliver a program.
definitely. And if they've got staff there that are smoking, we can go along and, you know, do a bit of a report on what's happening in the in that organisation, and then implement the program from there as well.
Okay.
And we also encourage, whilst they're doing the programs, to go back to their GPs and have health checks as well.
Mm.
So, you know, it's an overall picture of their health and well-being.
Right. Mm. Well, we started off talking about the annual netball day.
Yes.
At the beginning of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Who actually won?
I think it was a team called Kookaburras. Don't correct me. Don't quote me. I'm not quite sure.
All right. No doubt. Well, it'll
they
be
were
on,
all fantastic players
it'll
on the
be
day.
On Deadly Choices social media.
Yes, it will.
I'm sure it will. Gail, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.